This is a Glassbox Media Podcast.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of This Week in Travel. My name is Gary Arndt, coming to you like a big boy from his grown-up apartment for the first time in 9 years. I have literally been living out of a bag, and if you're a frequent guest or listener to the show, you know that I'm always coming in from my mom's basement or a hotel or something. But finally, I got a place of my own. I'm in Minneapolis in the Uptown area with a fantastic internet connection, which allows me to do these kind of podcasts. So if you hear any audio difficulties, it's not my fault. This is the 200th episode of the show, and with me again, Mr. Chris Christensen. How are you, sir?
I'm good. I'm also coming from my big boy setup. It's ironic that you say that, since Jen is coming from her daughter's desk.
Congratulations, Gary. And yes, Chris, I have gone backwards. I am coming from Cora's desk, where we have a book of maps, globes, and a whole setup of Shopkins.
I think we should do a spin-off show, This Week in Travel Junior. It would be like Muppet Babies was to the Muppets.
I like that. I like it a lot.
Well, my son actually has two podcasts of his own, so you know, I think the next generation is ready. So
it runs in the family. And right. The voice you hear sighing in the background, you might have heard before. You probably know her from such shows as Girl Meets Hawaii, Passport to Europe, Passport to Latin America, Samantha Brown's Asia. And according to her Wikipedia page, we share something in common. We are both known for our perky disposition. Samantha Brown.
Thank you very much, Gary. Again, congratulations on your 5 millionth podcast episode. I'm very flattered to be a part of it.
Well, thank you.
And how far into that introduction did we get before you were thinking, what did Kevin get me into?
Probably a week ago when I got the email.
And I'm sure you're used to these rather high production standards that we have here on the show. So
Anytime I can work from home is the highest production value I could ever hope for. So thank you so much.
Well, let's do a couple of news stories before we get into things with Samantha. The first of which, you know, we've had several stories on the show where we've talked about people getting kicked off of flights. This is one of the more interesting ones. So a man on a Virgin America flight, Robert Obti, I think is his name, he was at LaGuardia Airport, and when he got to the gate, he was told he couldn't board the plane. And it turns out the reason why is because earlier in the day, he was going through a revolving door, and he got into the same door as one of the pilots. And you know how you like can sometimes fit, you, like one person goes in a revolving door, but you could kind of fit two. And he did that, and they saw him at the gate, and they're like, yeah, we don't want him on the flight. And that was it.
Wow.
And
apparently they have that power.
Yeah, they can do whatever they want.
Well, they had said that he had bumped into the pilot, and when he told his side of the story, he was being pushed by a woman from behind. And when he fell out of the revolving door, that's when he bumped into the pilot. But here's the thing. He is a lawyer and also part of the Dallas City Council, according to his bio on the news spread.
You know, it's true. They have basically unlimited ability to kick someone off a flight for whatever reason. Now, Virgin America did apologize to the guy, and he says it's cool. I guess they gave him a couple free flights. But yeah, it's kind of scary. Usually when we have stories like this, it's about someone who's intoxicated or someone making threats. But it could be for something just as petty as going through a revolving door. I thought that was kind of odd. And the other thing is he's also Iranian, of Iranian descent, and they said they weren't really sure if it had something to do with that or not. The airline said it didn't, but you just never know.
And I have some, I mean, I get some the idea of that the person who's, you know, in charge of the plane, if he gets a bad feeling about something, you know, if he's suspicious of something, maybe he wants, you want him to have that power, but this does really seem like an abuse of, you know, power. You know, I don't know all the facts, but it's a weird story. At least they did better than the Emirates wasn't able to take somebody and they offered him a cake. Not like a new flight or something like, you know, some flight coupons or whatever, but would you like a cake?
How many 25 carat gold flakes were probably on that cake, though. It was probably worth $10,000, that cake, if it was Emirates.
They were taking a page from the Marie Antoinette service manual. In the Middle East, obviously a lot going on in the news right now, but you might be surprised to know that the nation of Syria is actually still out there promoting tourism. They've been talking about their beach resorts, and in all fairness, you know, while there is a lot happening in a lot of the country that you certainly would not want to visit, there are parts of the country which are relatively free of conflict and is a place that you can visit. So my question is, Samantha, is there going to be a passport to Syria anytime soon?
Yes. Yes,
excellent.
It's been in the works. It's been in the works. Unfortunately, it's been on hold. It's been put on hold now for about 10 years. But that to me sounded strange. And obviously with the visa waiver program that we're hearing about now, if we do go, you would probably be put on some sort of watch list, wouldn't you? I mean, if you go to Syria, especially as an American, that's going to label you as something or someone who people should watch. But that wouldn't be the only reason why I wouldn't go to Syria right now.
Well, no, I think you actually touched on it. When I read this, that was the first thing I thought of, is that even if you went for perfectly innocent reasons, the fact that you went would probably cause you untold grief.
Exactly, yes. Yeah.
Gary, have you been?
I've not. Again, it'll probably be the last country in the world I visit, or certainly one of the last. But the points guy, was it Brian?
Yeah, Brian.
You know what I'm talking about. Anyway, he went to Syria. Not Syria. He went to Turkey, which is not that big of a deal. And he got placed on some sort of watch list where he had to get pat-downs every time he went on a plane. And he had done the TSA pre-check and the
global entry.
Yeah, the global entry and everything. But it didn't matter. He got put on this special list, and there's like this – he even showed it. There was a picture on his boarding pass that basically said, you know, check this guy out. And he had to do something to get off the list.
And he is the most clean-cut looking guy you could ever, ever meet.
I don't trust those clean-cut looking guys, though.
Yeah.
Those are the ones you got to watch for.
I got about 15 kilometers from Syria back when everything was peaceful, when I was just visiting our former exchange student who lives in Gaziantep, Turkey. But it never even occurred to me that, gee, I really need to get to Syria before everything blows up in a civil war. I mean, that is not something you don't realize at that time, that your time is going to be limited that way. I mean, at that point, I was much more interested in the fact that I was 25 kilometers from Iraq, and it was during the Iraq War. So,
well, our friend and colleague Lee Abramonte, he must have been, because he wasn't he the youngest to visit every country in the world or something close?
Yeah,
to
we know multiple people who've been to Syria. Well, we've done an amateur traveler show in Syria, but, you know, we don't play that as much anymore.
So, no, I think...
The sad thing is, I remember the person I talked to had biked across Syria, and they were talking about how wonderfully generous the people were, and, you know, that they would be camping out someplace in a tent, and people would bring them tea in the morning, strangers and things like that. So it's so sad to think about, you know, have that picture of Syria and then the current picture, which is just, you know, terrible.
On a related note, last week I did an interview with Shane Dallas, the Travel Camel, about his visits to Kurdistan, Somaliland, and Afghanistan. Basic, you know, places people don't go that are considered dangerous. And he was talking to some of his friends in Kurdistan, and basically there's a large section of it that are perfectly fine. But in the news we're hearing about, you know, everything that's happening in Iraq and Syria, and to be certain, there are places you don't want to go, but there are also places that have not been touched by the conflict, and I think people kind of forget that you think that anything within the borders of, you know, on the map, that everything in there is somehow dangerous. And again, I'm not necessarily advocating you go there, but it is also not necessarily the case. There are places where kind of life goes on as normal.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Samantha.
When I did a series called Passport to Latin America, and it was like, you know, 2004, 2005, and any country I went to, it didn't matter. People said, oh, don't people get kidnapped there? And just because things were happening, say, in small parts of Colombia or Venezuela, like all of South America, the entire continent just had this reputation of being a fearful place to go to. And I was really surprised by that, that we as people just need to generalize things either to make us feel safer inside, but it's something that I think happens, unfortunately, a lot, and a lot of countries, you know, have a huge disservice because of that, whether it's from Mexico or Nicaragua or Panama. You see it on our side of the world as well, even closer to our own borders.
Right. Well, we actually didn't put it on our series of stories, but I know, Gary, you talked about it on that episode that you referenced, which I would recommend, by the way. That was great. I really loved hearing about Ethiopia and Somaliland especially. But the government of the U.S. has put out a travel warning for the world.
Yes.
Except the United States.
Basically, stay home.
Except the United States, except Chicago.
Well, ironically, didn't that come out just before the San Bernardino shooting?
The world ban.
The world, yeah, I think that came out just the week before. Yes. You know, don't leave the U.S.
Yes.
No. You know what's interesting about that is I had dinner with Johnny Jett and his wife Natalie, I think mere a couple of hours after that warning went out, and they were headed into Paris and London. And a special conference in Cannes, and they were talking about it. And I think Johnny was just so solid in, you know, we're going, we can't be stopped, and they've had this amazing trip as I've watched the photos unfold. But I think while I appreciate that attitude, I also feel like you have to listen to your gut. And that goes across any time when there's any kind of travel incident or just in general. It doesn't even have to be a warning out. If you have plans and something inside of you keeps telling you something's not right or, you know, maybe rethink this, I really believe that you got to listen to that. And that comes from inside, not necessarily a travel warning from the government.
No, but a lot of that gut feeling comes from the media.
Yeah.
And the only thing we hear is either you hear something bad about a country or you hear nothing at all. And that's why people still have this narco-terrorism attitude towards Colombia, even sure. though that stuff happened 30 years ago.
Yeah.
It's just that when it ended, there was nothing to replace it with in the news, so that's the last thing we think about.
Right. Well, and some of us were just in, I think Gary and I were just in Bangkok when was that? This
about
fall.
2 months ago.
No one remembers ever going to Bangkok.
It's all a blur. The travel schedule at that time was crazy. But that wasn't but 2 months after there was a terrorist attack there. Mm-hmm. And I remember the year that, you know, the World Trade Center, you know, was destroyed, I was in New York City for New Year's Eve that year. Or the end of that year. And I remember people saying, you know, you're just completely crazy, because at that point I think people were thinking, you know, that's the first attack and then the next one's going to be a New Year's Eve. And, you know, we didn't go to Times Square, but, you know, I'm not sure that I really want to be in Times Square on New Year's Eve anyway. That's just a little too many people for me. But, you know, you have to decide. I think in terms of safety, you're right that the news makes it look more likely than it is. So I was just looking in the stats in the U.S. of being killed by a terrorist. And remember, most terrorists are domestic terrorists, so, you know, you have to get a bigger picture there. Over the last 10 years is half as likely as being struck by lightning.
Yeah, I mean...
Well, Samantha, you live in New York. I mean, you guys must have bomb scares and threats all the time. Right?
Yeah, I mean, I lived a mere 7 blocks from the World Trade Center when it went down and, you know, lived for a year in an area that you had to show your ID to get into. Ground Zero was only accessible by my driver's license. and, you know, smelled it every single day, saw, all, you know, just a New York City completely changed because of that. And yet, I would still never advocate for not traveling. It's just something that literally happened in my own backyard. And yet, it I think, changed New York in this way that made us all concerned for each other. We all, like, looked each other in the eyes after that. We all cared for each other more, and we knew that you have to have more acceptance towards people when these things happen, that hate does not do any good. And it's so hard, because I think, Jen, you touched upon a really important part. In your gut, you feel like, oh, this isn't, you know, I just feel like I would be nervous. And if you don't enjoy an experience, then no, maybe there's plenty of places in the world now that you go to that aren't going to give you that feeling. And that's probably where you should go. But as a general message, I mean, let's bring up Chicago. I mean, our own cities have areas that are absolutely riddled with violence, gun violence. And yet I would still go to Chicago in a second. I wouldn't even think of not going to Chicago. I wouldn't even a week after the Paris attacks think of not going if that was already my plans. Yeah. Right. It's just something that it's hard to, it's you know, I think it's important for us in that travel industry to say, no, keep getting out there, because when you meet these people, you know, firsthand, You will, it's a different experience entirely than what you see in the media. The media only shows the bad stuff. It never shows the good stuff, never. And, you know, Gary, you're right, that people are reacting off of that as well.
I don't think I was meaning gut in terms of, oh, I'm watching the news, I'm reading the travel warnings, I have a plane ticket, I don't know if I should do it. I wasn't thinking so much in worry. I was thinking so much. I was thinking more in terms of maybe those once in a lifetime gut feelings where you know how people have gotten off of planes that maybe something happened afterwards or something. Mm-hmm. Just those very, very rare ones. Not your worried mind, but more. I don't know. Maybe I'm thinking a little too cosmically, but there have been people who sense things before something's about to happen.
The problem is the people that have the gut feeling that don't get on the plane and then the plane lands safely. You never hear about that.
Right.
So they probably outnumber the ones where the plane crashed 1,000,000 to 1, but you just never hear it. I'm thinking back to last year when there was the Ebola epidemic and people were canceling trips to South Africa because of what was happening in Sierra Leone.
Yeah,
which is further from Sierra Leone than London is, and they had no cases of Ebola when we had more in the United States, and I think a lot of it just has to do with fear of the unknown. That if you live in the United States, well, you know, like when the bombing happened in Boston during the Boston Marathon, that okay, that's Boston, and I live in a different part of the country, and that's far away, and I know that. But when you hear about something happening in Mexico, you just say all of Mexico, and so you lump the north with the Yucatan, even though the crime rate in the Yucatan is on a par with Finland. And right. We paint with that broad brush. I think that's one of the problems.
Yeah.
Let's move on to another story. This is also kind of a real serious one dealing with the Middle East. Kuwait Airways had a pilot that lost his license due to an invasion of the cockpit. by a suspected porn star. Now the alleged porn star, her name is Chloe Khan. I did some research on this because this is a top-notch award-winning journalism show here. I think that the label of porn star is inaccurate. She has appeared in Playboy, and that's it. Her claim to fame is that she's British, and she was on X Factor, which is kind of their American Idol, and she just had a train wreck of an audition, like the Sanjaya, I don't even remember, you know the ones from American Idol where it's just horrible. That was her claim to fame. Then she went to the U.S., started a webcam business, and dated the guy who owns Spearmint Rhino, and she is on a Kardashian curve where I think she's going to become huge one day. But yeah, not a porn star.
And so the pilot was kicked out. I forget the lead in the story. You just buried the lead, Gary.
Yeah, I know.
So the pilot lost his license because not only was she in the cockpit, but of course selfies were taken. And
was this during flight?
Yes.
Okay.
He was doing a lap dance and groping her and
oh yeah.
Oh. And wearing a Mile High Club pin.
The headline we saw was Kuwaiti airline pilot lets porn star play with his controls in cockpit.
She blames him for being on automatic pilot.
I think it might be easy to hide an attractive woman in the cockpit, but how do you hide smoking 40 cigarettes?
Did you read that
part where he said that he had also smoked 40 cigarettes during that flight?
I am guessing maybe kind of. They don't have the same restrictions on smoking. I don't know. I've been on a Kuwaiti Airlines flight before. I do not recall people smoking on it, though.
Impressive.
Apparently, they only do that in the cockpit.
So I was recently on a flight just like a month ago, and I was back, 16B or whatever, and the flight attendant comes up to me and she says, this is the first time this has ever happened to me, says, the captain would like to buy you a drink. I said, he would? He said, yeah, he likes you a lot and would like to buy you a drink. I was like, well, I wasn't going to have a drink, but yeah, I'm not going to turn down a drink from a captain. And then when the plane landed, I met him. He was a lovely man, and we took pictures in the cockpit. It was on the ground again, and I remember I took a picture and I said, "Do you mind if I tweet this?" Because I didn't know if that would get him in trouble, you know. Right. And he's like, "Oh, of course, you know, that was just a nice." I'm like, "Great, I'm going to tweet this out." So I tweeted out, gave him props, and it was nice. So so hopefully I will not be considered a porn star by Gary's standards.
No.
And I'm sure the captain didn't ask you to sit on his knee, Samantha.
No, he did not. No.
I tell you, if I had a nickel for every time that's happened to me.
But I was actually, I mean, I've never been in the cockpit. I was very flattered, and it was cool, and it was pretty neat. But and they said, sit down. And the co-pilot was there. They got out. You know, everyone, they were saying goodbye. I'm like, go ahead, sit down. I'm like, it's okay if I sit down? Like, yes, you can sit down. All right. And that's when we all enjoyed cigarettes together. So.
Do you, just as an aside, have you ever noticed that when you go to the restroom on a plane, they still have an ashtray in the door in almost every airplane?
No, I haven't. I've noticed they've replaced a lot of those old cigarette signs that say no with Wi-Fi now, so it feels like they have started to update those things, and it's interesting. So.
No, it was a big mystery that people were asking, why are they putting the ashtrays on the planes when you're not supposed to smoke?
Right.
And the answer was, we know people do it anyhow, and we would rather they put it there than flush it down the toilet or try to hide it, where it could cause more damage, it could potentially light something on fire. And that was the rationale they gave for why they did it.
Wow.
I think one of the flights I did this year still had the ashtrays in the seats, and that's never a good sign considering how long it has been since we've allowed the smoking on a flight in and out of the U.S. So it's like,
I love it when I'm on old planes, because an old plane means it hasn't crashed. It's a tested plane.
Airframes do wear out over time. There was the Hawaiian Airlines flight that basically had the roof rip off because of stress fractures in the plane. With planes that have been in, because planes stay in operation for, you know, 20, 30 years even. They replace the engines much more often than that, but then they periodically will x-ray the airframe to make sure that there are no fractures that basically can lead to structural damage. But yeah, there was a Hawaiian Airlines flight that basically got a sunroof in flight.
Yeah, they were able to land that flight though, right? Weren't they able to
land? I think they lost a flight attendant, as I recall.
That's
so
right.
It's a number of years ago,
yeah.
Probably at least a dozen at this point.
Chris, you are a glass half empty kind of guy.
That's me. That's what people say.
But seeing we have a glass half full kind of person with us, let's talk more to Samantha. So I want to start out by asking you, how did you get started doing this?
Was
travel your thing, or did you just kind of get a, you know, was it a casting call and you just kind of wound up doing it and now it's your thing?
So I went to school for musical theater and came to New York City to pursue performing arts and waited on tables in New York City for 8 years and just always submitted myself for auditions, and I got an audition for the Travel Channel. And actually I was recommended by the production company who had seen commercials that I had done. And they thought, oh, she's got a perky personality. She'd probably be good. And so the production company actually picked me to audition for the Travel Channel. And the funny story is that I was on a flight from LaGuardia through Dulles, connecting through Dulles to Jacksonville to make this audition. Now, I had 40 minutes to make the connecting flight through Dulles. And at the time, being a travel novice, had no idea that no plane leaves on time from LaGuardia. And Washington Dulles is the worst airport to travel through if you have a tight connection. And so the first time, I missed the flight. And so I didn't get to Jacksonville, so I called. And they said, okay, don't worry. We'll have you come again. And, well, actually, they said, we'll submit your video to Travel Channel, and they can decide from your reel. And then Travel Channel came back and said, no, we want to see her specifically audition for this role. We're going to choose who is the host by the end of this week, so we need to see her. So they put me on the exact same flight, LaGuardia through Dulles to Jacksonville, and the exact same thing happened. I landed in Dulles with 7 minutes to make the flight. And I had those stupid people movers. To this day, I hate those people movers. And so I run to the gate, and I'm literally almost throwing up because I'm sprinting. And I get to the gate, and I said, is that the flight to Jacksonville? And the gate attendant said, yeah, but I called Final Board a while ago. But go down, see if they'll let you on the plane. So I just run down, and it's just one of those 50-seat jets that you actually go out into the tarmac and go up the stairs for. It doesn't have a jetway. And so I'm running now out to where I see the plane, and this man, like, tackles me. He's like, where do you think you're going? I'm like, is that the plane to Jacksonville? And he said, yeah. I said, I'm supposed to be on that plane. He said, no, you're not. He said, I just called it for, you know, takeoff. And it's, you know, and I'm like, and I just drop my bags and I just start bawling. I'm like, you don't understand. I've been waiting on tables in New York City for 8 years, and I really think I can get this job. And he was not having any of it. But he said, the only person who can exceed my rule, basically, is the pilot. He's like, I'm going to ask him, but if he says no, you're not going. And I'm like, okay. And I'm like, okay. And so he walks up. The plane's still about 100 feet away, and he walks up, goes into the stairs, and I see him go into the cockpit, and then I just picked up my bags, and I ran to the plane. I put myself under the nose of that jet and just went, please! I just begged, and the pilot looked down at me and said, and that is when I knew I got the job.
Couldn't
do that today. This was pre 9/11, but we have actually tried to find that pilot. We have done everything we could because if it wasn't for him, I would not have the job I've had now for close to 15 years. So that's so if you want this job, which a lot of people do, you got to put yourself in front of a plane. That's it.
That's great story.
It does remind me of a question. When is the Samantha Brown the musical coming out then?
Exactly. Oh, who would play that? Yes. Exclamation point. Very soon. Very soon. It's right after my passport to Syria.
You've done so many. How many different series and shows have you done now for the Travel Channel?
I have done. I've tallied it up. I've done over 300 hours of television for them. 300 hours, I believe. And so there's various series along the way. I think there's 10 series altogether. And it's been an unexpected and phenomenal experience.
How many countries had you been to when you started?
I had been to only, I think possibly two. I think I'd just been to France and Italy at that point before I got the job. Yeah, and I always tell people, that's one of what I use to my benefit is that I really hadn't traveled before. And at that point, the people you saw on camera were Rick Steves, whom I love, and Lonely Planet, and they're phenomenal travelers. But they look like they know what they're doing all the time, and they do. And I didn't. And so I always wanted to bring that to the show, that I was really seeing the world for the first time, and that my show was for those people who had never been able to travel, and we're wondering, hey, if she, you know, if she's there, maybe I can do it too. So I just never really wanted to lose that sense of vulnerability, of excitement, of being somewhere new, and it's you know, now I kind of know what I'm doing, but it's I always want that sense of excitement and discovery to be in the shows that I do, which is it's pretty easy for me.
What do you think is the state of travel television right now? And I say this because you're one of the few people that is doing, like, travel.
Yeah.
Right? Not food. Not
weird, gross food.
Yeah. You know, so much of, like, what the Travel Channel, you know, it's the Travel Channel. And they used to have a lot more travel shows, and it's become less and less of that. And it's true of the History Channel. It's true of the Discovery Channel that you got. They've gone into the pawn shop, the Honey Boo Boo, all these things, which admittedly get ratings. But
the
it's
World
kind
Poker
of,
Tour used to be on the Travel Channel.
Yeah, that was there for a long time.
But there's been kind of a deviation from the mission that they started out with, and you know, what's in the title of the network. So where do you think things are at right now, and where do you think that the Travel Channel is heading going forward?
I think you're going to see them do a lot more celebrity-driven travel. They have a new show called Rev Runs the World, which is the, you know, Rev Run, his family, you know, Run DMC, and they had a great show either on, oh gosh, Bravo, or I forget, and it was really funny. And so they're a great family, and now they travel around the world. And I believe it did really good in the ratings. And I love it because Rev Run just brought diversity to our network. I'm sorry, it's not my network, the network. And so, but people love celebrities. They love to see what they do. I think the whole idea of having just a straightforward travel show, that they can't exist anymore, unfortunately. What I did with Passport to Europe, what I did with Latin America, Asia, where we just kind of show what you would want to see as a traveler. For some reason, it doesn't get the ratings, or the people who would be watching it no longer watch the Travel Channel because for so long it wasn't about travel, so it lost a great audience that loved travel. But you see those wonderful shows still on PBS, I think. That's, you know, those are more of the shows that can exist on that network, but when it comes to broadcast television, which we all know is slowly going away, no one's getting more ratings. They're slipping. And then an advertising community that is also in flux. You have two major industries because of technology that are struggling to find their way. It doesn't. Things have to change, and they have to make decisions that aren't really based on doing great travel shows, just getting shows that people will watch. So if they could get Honey Boo Boo and her travels to Hawaii, that might be a great show that would get them the ratings they need. Because that's their fuel. That's how they make money. That's what they do. The Travel Channel's there to serve their advertisers, and that's actually what the head of Travel Channel did say. And so that's what you're going to see. And you know, on my point of view, I wish it would be more about travel. I think people love to see what to do and be in the know and have the people they trust take them there. Actually, they did do a big study on that Travel Channel about why people watch travel, and it's always to be with people whom they know, meaning the host. They like when they're hosted, and they love to be in the know and kind of feel for themselves where they would like to go next. So there is a demand, there is a need, but just I think these industries are so in flux, it's just not what you're seeing right now. So we had a show, I had a great show called 50-50. It was phenomenal. We ambushed people on the street and took them on a 50-hour trip worth $50,000. They had to leave now. So it was just taking people out of, like, you know, you said you had to take care of your kids, too bad, you're going with us. And they would say yes, and then they would go on this great 50-hour adventure. They put that show up on Sunday, up against the NFL, didn't get the ratings, and so there's no season two. So this is the landscape of being on TV these days. It's not Travel Channel's fault. This is what every network is going through. How do we get more people to watch the network? And as soon as they don't, they pull the show. And so you can't grow as a show. You can't grow to, you know, get more people watching it because they hear about it from their friends. It's just kind of the state that we're in right now.
How does a DVR play into it? Because a lot of the shows, I'm not watching a lot of shows in real time. I'm recording them and watching them anywhere from an hour to 3 days later.
Yeah, so I think the whole Nielsen's rating system is outdated, right?
They're counting the TiVo plays now. In fact, Fox had a show that was coming on that was supposed to be a big show. They were expecting a big audience, and they did announce they were not going to announce overnights anymore. That even with this new show that would have really good overnights, they weren't going to announce overnights because that's not the real number, and they were going to wait and announce the number that came, you know, a week, 2 weeks later that included the TiVo numbers.
Yeah, because people generally, like you, Jen, I'm the same way, you DVR something, and then within 7 days, that's when you watch it. But then there's an advertising problem because now you can zip through the advertising. So they still want the people who are watching right then, who need to see it when it's fresh, and that's still the defining number, even though it really doesn't define how people watch TV today.
Mm-hmm. But I'm also watching on demand. Mm-hmm. And when you watch on demand, like I was watching Supergirl with Cora last night, we can't fast forward through the commercials.
Right, which is great. So
there's
best of both worlds.
That's almost, I mean, I'm sad that that doesn't count, because guess what? We are watching those advertising.
Yes, exactly.
The network is definitely counting those numbers because they have those numbers. In fact, those are the most real numbers that they have because the Nielsen numbers have always been a guess.
Mm-hmm.
They're not as good as we think. And for years, for instance, they underrepresented the younger demographic because they weren't measuring anything in college dorms or, you know, there was a lot of things they weren't counting because of their way that they were counting things. Mm-hmm. It's always just been the best guess we have. The most real numbers they have are you went to our network at, you know, CBS.com and you downloaded the show and we know exactly how long you watched and we know when you stopped watching.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a really interesting world that's opening up with digital media, which, you know, where networks think, well, I'm just going to take what we do broadcast on TV, and now I'm going to put it to the computer. That's not really where you're taking advantage of digital media. It's producing shows that have an interconnectivity, that have a social media component. You really do have to create different programs, I feel, for the digital arena. You just can't put your shows that are on broadcast TV here and expect the same thing to happen. So I think in that sense, there's something really exciting that we can do with travel, because if you are planning a trip to Paris, well, you're going to go to On Demand, and now you can have all the shows on Paris and say, well, let me watch these, or with an app. That's going to help you plan things as well. So I feel like travel television, in its just purest sense, and just giving people great ideas of what to do when they get somewhere to make them feel like they already sort of have a familiarity with the place, that now they can just go with an excitement. Those shows are still really valid to the traveler. And of course, video and is a huge component of that. You know, now with GoPros, that's changing everything. Drones are changing the way travel is shot and produced. And, you know, we can do things that it would take us days to do. We can now do in a few hours because of all the different, you know, technical changes that have come to our industry.
Right. Wow. Well, they're changing the budget for how much you'd have. That's not a helicopter shot anymore.
It's not. No.
What about Netflix? Is Netflix doing anything in the travel space?
I don't think they are.
Not that I've heard.
Because they're doing great work with dramas.
Well, I tell you, I mean, it just proves, you know, it's interesting because at the same time you could say, okay, we're in the demise of television, but then you could say we're in the golden age of television where, you know, the honey boo-boos and those things, those people are going away because, well, something comes up that they need to go to jail, and so they can't shoot a show. But then you have, you know, like we saw, the Mad Men's, the just incredible programs from Netflix, Amazon Prime, all these other entities are starting to pop up in the same way that cable challenged network television. These entities are now challenging cable, which is challenging network, and I hope it just raises, like they say, the tide lifts all boats for everyone, that people do want quality programming.
Well, I feel like we should apologize if our expansive This Week in Travel audience has, you know, pulled some of that audience away from the Travel Channel. I don't know how much we're responsible for, you know, whatever demise there may be here, but, you know,
Can you explain what it's like to everyone listening, when you're on location, how many people are in your crew that are following you around? Because people only usually see you.
Right.
How big is your team? And like, say you're in, I don't know, Paris. How many hours a day are you going to be out shooting? How much do you try to cram in? How long are you away from home for?
Sure. So a half-hour show is a 4-day shoot. An hour show is an 8-day shoot. In all my like Passport series, we had a cameraman, a sound man, a producer. We would pick up an assistant, and then we'd have a fixer from that, say a Parisian fixer who knew everything, who you know was going to take us to all the different locations, he or her. And then I always had a stylist, which is amazing. So there's 6 people, and then myself, and we always wanted to keep it that small, because you can really upset the energy of a place by coming in with a camera and a light, and you know, and so there's always that challenge. We start, oh my gosh, I mean, there are easily 14, 16-hour days. We, you know, start from the morning and go till we can't shoot anymore, and then we pack up the next day and we get to the next city. So with the series 50-50, for 3 months of travel for that show, we were in 54 airports on 17 flights and traveled about 70,000 miles. So it's intense. It's grueling. That show actually had us arriving after a 10-hour overnight flight and literally having a film crew pick us up in baggage claim. So there was no, because they wanted it to be real time. And it was, I loved it. I mean, I was like, I was all for people to see me look like I'm a traveler. Like, yeah, my hair's not going to look good. But it can be unbelievably intense. And so there's the travel experience and there's a travel show, and a lot of times they kind of, you know, mimic each other, but a lot of times the travel show is a lot more energy and work than people would assume.
For the different series, are these ideas that you're involved with in production? Have you had ideas that you pitched that for whatever reason never got produced, or they just kind of gave it a thumbs down? How does the process work from getting the idea to actually going into production?
It's like almost a year to a year and a half process. It's incredible. So a lot of times I'll have my own ideas, but usually the production company has a better idea. I'm like, no, your idea is better than mine. We'll go with yours. So a production company, the production company for 50-50, Big Table Media, they're out from San Sacramento. They do all of the kitchen crashers and bathroom crashers for DIY. So that's where they ambush people, like in a Lowe's or a Home Depot, and they say, "We're going to give you a new kitchen." So they just thought, "Well, let's bring that exact same concept to travel, and have it where we crash people and we take them on this amazing trip, but they get choices along the way of what they get to do." So that begins with them already having an in with Scripps Networks. They've already produced, you know, successfully for them, really good shows, and they say, "We want to do something else," and then another person said, you know, why don't you attach Samantha to that project? Would she be interested in doing it? And then they said, well, let's have a co-host, Chris Grundy. Let's get him involved. And then we just all start talking. But from the beginning of the inception of an idea to it actually airing was about a year and a half. And it is a intense. I mean, it is a heavy load. And so I always tell people when they say, you know, I've got a great idea for a travel show, I always say it doesn't matter. Ideas are so cheap, they probably have already heard it. It's your ability to make that idea happen. That is what separates you. That's what gets you, you know, the access to be on television. And it's usually having a great relationship with a production company that's going to give you that inroad.
I don't know how many of our friends we've had who have said, oh, I'm shooting a pilot for, or I'm in discussions with Travel Channel about doing a show, you know, that have never seen the light of day. I mean, I don't think people realize that, you know, what, a tenth of the shows that are started end up on TV, and I may be optimistic there, so.
Yeah, absolutely, and for good reason. I mean, that, you know, this is a massive network, a part of even a bigger Scripps Networks, and they have a lot of hours to fill. They have a really hard job. I would not want that job, determining what the tastes of viewers from a very large and diverse country would be, to give them the ratings that everyone wants and everyone needs. So I'm glad I'm not on that side.
If somebody was starting out and they say, okay, I want to be the next Samantha Brown, but they're doing it. They're doing it in this.
Get out of here, Gary.
I already got the perky disposition.
You do, yeah.
And he doesn't even need the stylist. So
I know, really, he saves money.
If they want to be the next Samantha Brown, but doing it in this media landscape, which is very different from when you started, what would be your advice to them? Is it to try to do the same path to become a host on the Travel Channel, or do you think that maybe doing something on YouTube or independent publishing is probably a better way to go?
I think it's the best way to go, because then Travel Channel is going to see you successful in that, and they're always looking at that as a great inroad into their network as well. Definitely people have access to things that I never had, you know, 15 years ago. It was basically you had to have an agent first, and then that got you the audition, and then it was all these gates, all these barriers. And now you can film yourself, you can broadcast yourself, you can edit on your own small computer, you can add music in, you can add your own sound effects. So when I do talk to a lot of women who would love to do what I do, I'm like, then start doing it. Nothing's stopping you. Nothing's stopping you, you know, getting a friend or trying to, you know, you have to start creating your own community, whether it's people who shoot camera and want to have more for their more material to show other people, get more experience, you know, start talking to them and just create it yourself. But the most important thing is to have a voice that can really resonate with people. So never try to be me. Don't try to be Anthony Bourdain. He's already taken. Andrew Zimmern. These are, you know, Adam Richman. These are great personalities that they're already themselves. So don't try to be them. Try to be something you are and have a perspective that is unique, obviously, to you. So it can absolutely happen. Absolutely.
Okay. I got to ask you now because you brought it up. Anthony Bourdain kind of gives you shit on his show every so often. What's the relationship you have with him? Is there any animosity, or is it just kind of just making fun?
Well, we dated in the 90s, and ever since then, it was just...
It ended badly.
We take Pilates together every Wednesday, and he's great. No, actually, he is a great guy. I have always respected the hell out of him. He does voiceover, and I hate voiceover. As someone who hosts a show, I hate getting into a little egg crate container and doing, like, now I went over it after the coffee, I headed over to Neuschwanstein. You know, I hate it. And he changed that. You know, he made it like reading a great novel. So I've always respected him, and to be made fun of him is sort of, you know, well, I'm in really good company. I think it was like 5 or 6 years ago, was a part of his Christmas special. I don't know if any of you saw that, and
yeah,
that is
I did.
Where so I got to have a lot of fun, and we had a blast. And I think after that, he posted in his blog that I was his hero, that I was one of the few people who just kind of let go of my, you know, my brand, my persona, just to have a lot of fun. And he was great. So I like him a lot, and boy, do I miss him on the network.
So what does the future hold for you? What projects do you have coming up in 2016 and beyond?
Well, I actually have a show on the Travel Channel this Saturday, which is great for DVRable. It's on at 2 and 2:30. It's called Track Down Samantha Brown. And it's kind of a travel show in reverse, where I do all these things, but I never tell you where I am. We go to 3 destinations in a country and a state. We go to an unknown place, but that I love. Then we go to kind of the tourist hotspot. Then we go to the major city. So the clues get pretty obvious as we progress through the show. But again, we don't know until the very end. And we always try to, of course, throw you off by giving you a different perspective of a place you thought you knew really well.
Wow.
So it's a lot of fun. Yeah. So Track Down Samantha Brown. That's this Saturday. And
do we win then?
Yes. Do you? Oh, that's everyone
Did
asked that. I'm like, there should be that. It should be that. That's right. And my mother was worried about how, you know, it would become like a stalking show. Like, is that where people stalk you? Like, no.
Here's Samantha Brown's living room.
Yes, yes. And then I have another show, The Trip, coming up. So I still have quite a few shows with the Travel Channel. I'm not with them as much as people remember me. And I was on all the time with Passport to Europe, but obviously I have children and stuff, so I can't dedicate a lot of time. That's the thing about travel TV. Travel takes a lot of time, and then you add TV to that, and you're just never home. So,
and how is, I've been waiting patiently to ask, how have your travels changed since you've had your twins?
You know, it's funny. I'm always on, they've changed in that I've always I'm always on a lookout for, even if I'm not traveling with them, I'm like, is there a playground nearby? Mm-hmm. Are there, you know, like, what would make a great place for my kids? Because I'm always thinking about them. They're great travelers. We'll be traveling a lot with them, planes, trains, automobiles, during the winter. That's obviously very important for parents. But people always ask me, is it really hard to leave, you know, 3-year-old twins behind and travel? I'm like, hell no. It's really nice. Like, I get a break. But why do you think Kevin loves to go to those T-Bex, all those great events? Like, oh my gosh, we get to sleep through the night, get a big glass of wine. But no, I love them. But so I'm definitely... on the lookout less for the hip spots to get the cool cocktail and more, oh, what's a great place that the whole family, you know, will love to go to and can really just be checkoff lists for all members of the family, not just, you know, the hipsters or this. I've kind of broadened my perspective a lot.
And there isn't, I haven't seen much family travel programming. Do you think that that's an area where you could break into?
Definitely, you know, it's funny, I don't want to involve my kids, though. I mean, okay. You know, they don't take direction well. So, so maybe when
perhaps
they're little,
perhaps you could
cast
so someone else's kids yeah. as your kids.
That's so true. Yeah, exactly. Get some of those cute, well-behaved Screen Actors Guild kids. They're already professionals. So I think that kind of show would be great. Also, I think it'd be really great on a digital sense. I don't know if it would work on broadcast. Television in terms of getting ratings because they've tried that before and you know
they have okay
yeah but I mean this goes back 10 years that family travel never rated that well but it could rate well maybe on a Saturday or a Sunday. Maybe they just didn't try the right places because it's a huge topic. That's the thing, that there's so much need for it because it's not just traveling parents with their kids, but it's grandparents, parents, and kids. There's multi-generational travel. There's, you know, the baby boomers are a massive audience, and travel is their number one goal in life. Now they're retired, and they want to travel, and they want to bring their kids and their grandkids. So it's a hot topic, and I think all of us feel like the internet becomes overwhelming in its information, and you would just like someone who just lays it out for you to say, hey, this is what you should do.
All right. Anything else before we move on to the next segment of the show?
No.
Oh, I do have one final question.
Okay.
You are the travel ambassador for AARP.
Yes.
Are you eligible for AARP?
I am. I'm not because of my age, but because I have an honorary membership, so I get all those. So Gary, I'm going to beat you in line for that, you know, half-off sandwich deal at Friendly's.
Oh, Friendly's. Hey, I join you for that.
Oh, I love Friendlies.
All right, then. Let's move on to our picks of the week. Chris, you got anything for us?
I do. When we were talking about, you know, if somebody was trying to be the next Samantha Brown, and, you know, not that anyone could, but I thought of Sonia's Travels. Sonia does a show on YouTube that is, I really enjoy. I think it's one of the better produced travel shows, short form travel shows, and I'm pleased to see that now she's getting, you know, not the 100 downloads an episode that she was getting at one point, but she's up to tens of thousands of downloads, and she does a real nice show, Sonia's Travels. And like all of the links, by the way, we should say, if you ever are wondering about a link we talk about in the show, they're all in the lyrics of the episode, so we should mention that, because I don't think we have before.
Jen, do you have something for us?
I do. We were just talking about family travel, and Cora was given a terrific gift for her birthday this year, a kids' travel journal. And it is published by a company called Mud Puppy, and I went to Mud Puppy's website, and they have a whole bunch of journals and activity booklets for kids. So it's really neat. It talks about your vacation, where you're off to, who's going with me, how I'm getting there. There's spaces for drawing. There's what you're packing for your trip. And she just turned 7, and it's just the perfect age for this to start this. It probably could go up for a few years. But there's all these lines where she can fill in and start talking about trips from her own perspective, because previously she's just been drawing pictures. from her trips. And so now she's at the age where she can definitely do some sentences, so we're going to encourage her to do this. And Mud Puppy has a bunch of different levels of the journaling, so check them out. This is the Kids Travel Journal, and it is from Mud Puppy.
And she'll be blogging next for JanLeo.com, is that right?
Yes. Now, when she was probably born, up till one or two, I was hoping to have her blogging by age five, so I've missed that deadline. She does have to work on her keyboarding skills, but we both love live streaming, and we are headed out to Park City, Utah, tomorrow, actually, and Sundance after that, so Cora and I will be doing some live streaming from Utah.
I love it.
Excellent. So my pick this week, speaking of keyboarding, is this little thing. And if you're listening in audio, you're not going to be able to see it, but it's the Apple Magic Keyboard. Now, what's wonderful about this is I had a Logitech solar wireless keyboard for my computer. Problem is, if you're watching this on YouTube, most of you are not, I'm in kind of a dark room right now, and the keyboard was constantly running out of battery. So I went to the Apple store, which is a couple blocks away, and got this brand new keyboard that Apple has. And it's extremely lightweight, extremely small, and the wonderful thing is it's wireless, but it runs off a Lightning connector, which is the same connector that you use for the iPhone. So that's how it charges. Now, the old Apple wireless keyboards used to require two AA batteries. This requires no batteries. It's fully rechargeable from the Lightning port, and it can be used with an iPad, it can be used with an iPhone, or any sort of Bluetooth device. So it costs about $100, somewhere in that price range, and like I said, extremely lightweight and very easy to take with you. If you wanted to do some writing, or you wanted to bring an iPad with you while you're traveling, but you still want to have the luxury of having a keyboard, this is an excellent choice and would easily fit into any bag. It is the Apple Magic Keyboard. Samantha, do you got anything for us?
Yes, this is just like a tip, a place that I like to go to.
Anything.
Okay. A website I really like a lot is called projecttimeoff.org. It's basically, they're trying to start a movement to bring awareness to the fact that Americans leave about 430 million days off on the table instead of traveling. I think each American leaves 2.5 days off as a, you know, paid vacation time and staying at work. And I think we're all sort of, maybe not us, but guilty of that. And I think Americans should go to that website and be aware of what they're losing out, and really the studies, the serious studies behind what happens to a family, what happens to your own work, workload, your sense of self when we don't travel. And it's not only travel. Travel is so important. It's just about actually taking that time and doing something fun, doing something different with your family, and how important that is, and that we really are breeding the next generation of work martyrs. We're just, we just value work, and that's it, and where we're going with that, if that continues. So I think it's just eye-opening.
I ran into that when I first got out in the working world. I was at HP, my first job out of college, and there was a crisis about 6 months in, and we were working just incredible lots of hours to fix this, and I was given like 2 days off as compensation for this, and the person that I was working with wasn't given any time off. They were given a big project because the manager said, he doesn't take the time off he gets. It's like, wow. He's already losing a week of vacation every year.
Right.
There's just no point in giving him compensation time because he doesn't take it.
Right.
All right, then, let's start to wrap things up. Chris, what's new on the Amateur Traveler this week?
I have absolutely no idea, but I'll check.
Dude, just pick a place. People won't know.
We probably covered it. Yeah, we probably covered it. Well, we are with the Amateur Traveler, we're seven episodes short of 500 episodes now. The last episode we did was on an area that I had to look up, the Aeolian Islands, which were featured in the Odyssey, actually, but they're just north of Sicily, and they're a UNESCO World Heritage Site, Gary.
I sailed through Stromboli and actually saw the volcano erupting, I don't count it as a visit, simply because I was on the deck of a ship and it was at night. So I saw lava, but that's all I saw. Jen, where can people find you online?
You can find me on Twitter and Periscope at @JenLeo and on the LATimes.com travel website for my WebUS column.
Excellent. And Samantha, where can people find you online?
At Samantha Brown for Twitter, Samantha Brown Travels Instagram, and I have a website as well, Samantha-Brown.
Very good. And as usual, you can find me at everything-everywhere.com and on your social media platform of choice. And until next time, remember to get outside and check out Samantha on, oh, shit, what's the name of the show? It's
Track Down.
Track Down Samantha Brown.